Anyway, it is so good to be with you. We're wrapping up this series, Wise Up. There's so many things in the book of Proverbs. Honestly, you could read a different chapter every day for the rest of your life and you wouldn't pick it all up. So many awesome, awesome things. And today, if you got none of the other messages, today might be the most important because not only because it's the last one, but because the thought is we need to keep going. No matter what we're going through, we need to keep going. We need to press on. And sometimes it's hard to press on, but it's very important that we try again no matter what happens in our life. If our relationships fall apart, our jobs fall apart, doesn't matter. We need to try again, and everybody fails. I want you to watch this little video to warm you up to the thought and idea of the message, I think.
Dismissed from drama school with a note that read, "Wasting her time, she's too shy to put her best foot forward." Turned down by the Decca recording company, who said, "We don't like their sound, and guitar music is on the way out." A failed soldier, farmer, and real estate agent. At 38 years old, he went to work for his father as a handyman. Cut from the high school basketball team, he went home, locked himself in his room, and cried. Teacher told him he was too stupid to learn anything, and he should go into a field where he might succeed by virtue of his pleasant personality. Fired from a newspaper because he lacked imagination and had no original ideas. His fiance died, he failed in business twice, he had a nervous breakdown, and he was defeated in 8 elections. If you've never failed, you've never lived.
Yep, sometimes you just have to keep going. And sometimes we don't want to keep going, you know. Sometimes we just get tired of trying and feeling like we're not quite measuring up and not quite making it, don't we? I mean, we just get tired of it. If you ask me who our greatest president is, you know, I mean, I can think of a couple of them that I would put way up to the top. You know, you got Mr. Washington, and you got Mr. Lincoln, and the video referred to him a little bit, but I want you to think about what might have been on the resume of Abraham Lincoln. He had a very difficult childhood. He lived in poverty, received 1 year of formal education. That's his resume. You ready to hire him? In 1831, he launched a business, and it failed. 1832, he ran for state legislator, was defeated. 1833, started another business. It failed. 1834, was elected to state legislator. 1835, his fiance suddenly died. 1838, he was defeated in a bid for Speaker of the House. 1840, he was defeated in a race for elector. 1842, he married Mary Todd, and the marriage was, to put it mildly, a source of torment for the rest of his life. It's not necessarily torment for the rest of your life, it just was his life, okay? He fathered four sons, 3 of whom died before age 18. He ran for Congress and was defeated in 1843 and 1846. He ran for Congress and finally won. And between 1848 and 1858, he was defeated 4 consecutive times running for public office. Now, if you heard that story, you would think that in 1860, when it came time for him to run for president, he would not have even bothered, wouldn't you? I mean, those are not qualities that would make someone the obvious choice for president, but he ran, and the world has not been the same since. I mean, the world, not just America. His impact has changed everything forever. Today we're looking at the impact of those who continue to try. I love this Proverbs 24:16 might be one of my favorite verses. Though a righteous man falls seven times, and he's righteous. A righteous man, it doesn't say though a non-righteous, even one doing the right thing, falls seven times. He doesn't fall once. He falls again and again and again, and he rises again. But the wicked are brought down by calamity. You know, if you don't stand up, you can't fall seven times. You can't fall if you don't bother. And so many times in our world, the problem is standing up. You know, when we fall, it's interesting to me, the suicide rate continues to rise, especially among very young people today. You know, if you don't stand up, if you give up, everyone falls. It's not wrong to fall. Though a righteous man falls seven times, maybe you feel like you failed at something this past week. You know, it's okay. Solomon says, just get up. Because the difference between a wise man and a fool is not determined by whether or not he falls. It's because we all fall. It's really, do we get back up? Failures who give up are just a dime a dozen. Failures who get up are one in a million. It's hard to continue to get up, isn't it? You know? Some of you, any of you remember when you were that age? Anybody? Anybody? Nobody? Nobody? Good, because I knew you'd be making it up if you did. But I do remember when my kids were that age, learning to walk, and holy cow, every time they were right out around the edge of getting something accomplished, they would get really emotional and ornery and testy and stressed out. Did you see that in your kids too? You know, when my oldest son learned to ride a bike, he was fit to be tied. Couldn't learn it. And his little brother, 2 years younger, jumped on the bike and rode it without a lesson. And that didn't help many at all. But finally, one day, he tried again. He tried again. You know, there was a study of 300 highly successful people: Albert Einstein, Helen Keller, Franklin Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, Albert Schweitzer. 75% of them all went through childhood trauma of one sort or another: divorce, illness, poverty, abuse, whatever. 25% of these 300 individuals had some sort of disability. Isn't it interesting? FDR had this disability, but if you didn't look close, you didn't even know it, because they sort of propped him up so he could speak and didn't take pictures of him in the wheelchair. Isn't that interesting? And yet, here was a guy that helped us get through a very difficult time in history. But none of these things made it so that they quit. Did they feel like quitting? How many of you ever felt like quitting? Come on now. How many of you just lied? No. We've all felt like quitting. We felt like quitting in marriage. We felt like quitting in parenting.
I want to quit adulting.
I don't know what to tell you. You have to adult. There you are.
I'm tired of it.
Yes, I know. I know. Sometimes I get a little tired too of that, you know, I know. But we felt like quitting as parents. I remember one day I did quit. I actually quit as a parent. My daughter, who was a teenager, an upper teenager, and was a little bit difficult, because she was a preacher's kid. I mean, your kids were not like that, I'm sure. But my daughter, who was difficult one day, you know, I'm trying to give her a little direction. She's ranting and raving and everything else. And finally, I was just totally beat down. And I just looked at her and said, "I quit." And she said, "What?" I said, "I quit. You do what you want. I'm not giving you any direction. I quit." And actually, I said it with a broken heart because my heart was broken because I was thoroughly defeated at that point. And she starts crying and says, "But I love you, Daddy. I love you." And I couldn't even speak. At least for a few minutes. And we've all quit. We've quit work. We've quit in everything we've done. If you are a pastor, you've quit about 68 million times. That might sound strange to you, but the first rule of being a new church start pastor is you have to quit quitting. See, you have to, because you just have to keep going. A doctor once said that the one contributing factor in success, successful attempts at quitting smoking is that someone has had a previous attempt at trying to quit smoking. Because you got to try and try and try again. you got to keep trying again and again and again. Sometimes, you know the banter, if at first you don't succeed, try again. Aren't you glad that's not the theme of the message? If at first, yeah, you all know it. Try again. I've failed so many times. I've done diets that didn't work, workouts that didn't work, dealt with finances that didn't work. How about you? You know, I've started new ministries and nobody showed up. Nobody. It's kind of depressing, you know. I've done New Year's resolutions that seem to go away by New Year's Day about 2 o'clock. I don't know, you know. I've started projects that aren't completed. I've preached some sermons that bombed. I've tried to forget about them, but I know I've done it. Oh, my wife is such a wonderful woman. Amen. She knows. Her job every Sunday is just to say to me after the service, "That was the best message I've ever heard in my life." Sometimes she has her fingers crossed. Her toes crossed, I think. But, you know, I've preached some bombs. It's easy enough to say, why try? And then we go back to Proverbs, though a righteous man falls 7 times, he rises again. But the wicked are brought down by calamity. Why don't you say this with me? Though a righteous man falls 7 times, he rises again. But the wicked are brought down by calamity. Saw a couple of you elbowing your spouses. Rise again, spouse. See, because the difference between being a wise man and a fool is just the wise man gets up and the fool doesn't. Simple as that. The wise man gets up and the fool gives up, you know. The fool gives up. You may be discouraged, but you got to keep giving. Three things I think might help you to keep trying. And first of all is you need to keep going because God believes in you. Paul writes these words from Philippians chapter 1, verse 6. I'm sure you've heard them before. I'm confident of this, that he who began the good work in you will carry it unto completion until the day of Jesus Christ. No matter where you're at, the one who started the good news is not done with you yet. You know, God loves you too much to leave you as you are. Isn't that good news? I think it's great news. I think it is great news. So we press on. We press on. Oh yes. Isn't that interesting? We need a slide, and my wife puts up the slide of my defeat from last week as she beat me in the race. You notice how my medal is turned backwards and everybody else's is forward?
My eyes are closed too.
My eyes are always closed. It's easier that way. But we keep trying. Yesterday, Carrie and I did our long run for the week, which is starting to get a little longer. It was 7 miles. And I was feeling kind of energetic. And she wasn't feeling so energetic, and so I decided I was going to make up for that day. And so for the last quarter of a mile, I took off like a bandit. I figured she was nowhere near me. I got to within about 3 feet of the finish line, and I knew I had beat her, and I stopped, and all of a sudden I heard these footprints rapidly coming upon me, and I'm like, had to start up again. Or she had had me. But at least I kept trying. See, even my granddaughter Lil, she ran a quarter mile race. It's interesting when you're 3 years old and you run a race. She would run really, really fast, and then she'd start to walk, and her parents would say again, 1, 2, 3, go! And she'd take off again. And she'd start walking again, 1, 2, 3, go! You know, I guess I need somebody next to me yelling, 1, 2, 3, go, you know. I mean, we just gotta keep going. The God who began a good work in you isn't done, isn't going to stop. I love the story of McDonald's. Do you know the story of McDonald's? It was started by two brothers whose name were McDonald, right? And they had a little hamburger stand and people liked it, but they had no dream of it becoming anything except for one restaurant. And Ray Kroc came for lunch one day and said, I kind of like this. And he paid him $68 gazillion or whatever it was for the right to franchise this thing. And if it wasn't for his persistence, there would be families all over the country eating nutritious food today. I mean, they got what? McDonald's is great oatmeal. Well, if I go there, I'm probably not eating oatmeal. But if anyone is in Christ, Paul says, he is a new creation. Just keep going because God believes in you. And Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5:21, God made him who had no sin, sin for us. God made Jesus sin for us. He became everything we've done wrong so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Not only does God believe in you, he is working you over so that you can become all he wants you to be. He believes in you. And the second thing I would have you know is that you need to keep going because God expects you to. God expects you to. One of my favorite stories from the Gospels comes from Luke chapter 5. We had a little discussion of Luke chapter 5 just before the service started because I was trying to confirm something I believed, and thank God this time I happened to be right. But it's Jesus is preaching on the lake. It's also known as the Sea of Galilee, but it's the lake of the Gennesaret, and he's preaching from there. I love it because it is a very, very peaceful place. That was a picture that I took, and it is a still place. It's surrounded by mountains. You could sit in a boat and talk, and 1,000 people could hear you. That's really, you've often wondered, how did all these people hear? Well, they heard. You know, it's amazing. And I want to read you the whole story. It says, one day Jesus was standing by the lake, and the people were crowding around him and listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats and the one belonging to Simon, and he asked him to put out a little bit from shore, and he sat down and he taught the people from the boat. I love this. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the water and let down the nets for a catch. And Simon answered in verse 5, Master, we've worked hard all night. Sometimes it feels that way, and we haven't caught anything. You would think it was me fishing, you know. Haven't people in our church catch fish, but, you know. We haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the nets. It's curious to me. He lets down the nets not because he thinks he's going to catch fish. He lets down the nets because Jesus told him to let down the nets. You can have obedience even if your faith is weak. I love verse 6, which you don't have. It says, when they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that the nets began to break. And verse 7 said, they signaled their partners in the other boats to come and help them. And they came and filled the boat so full that they began to sink. So they let down the nets. There's an immediate harvest, and they're prepared for harvest, so they signal the partners. And I was thinking about that in regard to church. We let down the nets all the time. And you all are the partners. And one day there's going to be a magnificent harvest, and I'm going to have to signal to you, come on, give me a hand, because I can't handle them all on my own. You see, I can't handle them all on my own. I can't possibly do that. But they had obedience. Sometimes that's what you need. When you begin, when you obey, you begin to believe. And sometimes it's obedience that makes you makes you begin to believe, not belief that makes you obey. You just obey. You do the right thing, and your heart follows. You know, it's amazing. Why did Peter try again? Because he was obedient. He was obedient. Keep going, because God expects you to. When you fail and you try, you're telling God something. I have faith in you even when I don't have faith in me. When you fail and you keep trying, you're telling God, I will obey you even when it seems hopeless. And sometimes it does. And God can give you great victory. And the third point is, you need to keep going. Keep going. Just keep pressing, because the world needs you too. The world needs you too. You got to keep climbing up that mountain. Keep moving forward. Keep going, because the world desperately needs you to do exactly that. The world needs you too, expects you to, and needs you to. It's pretty amazing. The world needs you too. You know, it's so easy for people to say, I can't do it. I can't deal with it because of my inadequacies. I couldn't possibly accomplish that. You know, we keep fishing because he tells us to. I got to tell you, I have started several ventures I didn't think possibly stood a chance of working. And when they have worked, my jaw goes kind of like this. Really? Have you ever done that? I mean, whew. When I became a pastor, I was not convinced. I thought God was calling me, but I was not convinced, because I had heard, I've been around pastors. I really wondered about their calling, which might sound judgmental of me, but it didn't seem like they really had any abilities or gifts and graces. So I wondered about myself. And when I went into the ministry and became a pastor, after about 4 or 5 weeks, I was just astounded. I was absolutely astounded. I said, it seems like the people don't hate me. This is fantastic. I mean, and kept going, and they encouraged me. But it was astounding. But the world needed me to do that. Every time I read about someone trying and finding success, I just am thank God for their example. You know, one of the things I had to accomplish in order to get through college was I have a Bachelor of Science, Bachelor of Arts degree. Thank you. I don't even know what my degree is. And I had to accomplish 2 years of a foreign language. Now, I am foreign language deficient. I am musically deficient, but I couldn't learn a foreign language to save my life. Anybody with me? I took Spanish, man, because that's the easiest one. And I, within the first 2 weeks, had a tutor. At week 5, I dropped Spanish because I flat out, there was no way I was going to pass it. There was absolutely no way. But I had to have 2 years of foreign language to get a degree. So I said, well, I'll try something different this fall. And I took Greek. Now you're gasping because you think that sounds challenging. In fact, I took first year Greek in the summer. I was going to get it all in about 10 weeks, And I got through the first trimester, and I got through the second trimester, and I realized I was way behind, and I dropped the third one, but I continued to attend class, you know, for that. 6 weeks later, I started again. I took Greek 1 all over again. Yes, even the two classes I had completed, I didn't take them for academic reasons. I took them because I wanted to learn, and the professor stood up in front of the class on the first day with a rubber chicken in his hand, and he said, "Repeat after me, Greek is fun and easy." He thought the chicken would help. He lied. Somehow, because I'd already done Greek 1 and 2, I managed to get it enough so I could do Greek the third class of the first year. And then that summer, I was already graduated from college except for completing Greek. That summer, I took Greek year 2 in the summer, and God sent a hippie to be our teacher. And he delivered us. God had to send him, and I got through, and when I was finally through, it was about mid-August, I had to take Greek proficiency as an entrance requirement of college, and I had just got through all summer of Greek, and I took the Greek proficiency test and failed it. So then I took what's called Idiot's Greek. And I caught up, and it was fine, and that was great. But, you know, the bottom line is it's a very difficult language. The reason it's a very difficult language is it's unspoken. We can see the letters, but we don't know how they are to be pronounced. So it's pure memorization, unspoken. So this is good news, though, because if you're reading a name in the Bible and you think, man, I don't know what that name's supposed to mean, all I have to say is you have permission to screw up because you might be right. Who knows?
Or you can say
hard
word.
Huh?
Or you can say hard word.
Hard word. You can do that, too. But, I mean, if you mess up, you might actually be right. Everybody else might be wrong. We don't really know. But you got to keep going, you know. Dave Ramsey, he bounced back after financial disaster. Dennis Byrd, anybody know who he was? Professional football player for the Detroit Lions. Broke his neck early on in his career. They said he'd never walk again. And a year later, he walked out onto the football field. You know, he'd never walk again. God had a different opinion. When we keep going, things happen. Giving up is selfish, but trying again is the most unselfish choice you can make. It is the most unselfish choice. One of my seminary professors dealt with depression every day of his life for 40 years. And every day of his life, he forced himself out of bed. He forced himself to school. And he taught as a fantastic professor, and every day of it was difficult. People who struggle with things like that, I just want to look them in the eye and say, you're my hero. You get up, even though it's really, really hard, and you do it, even though it's... Does that make sense? I mean, how heroic. It doesn't get any better than that, I think. Well, I just want to... close with the story of bread. You know the story of bread, don't you? We've been eating it for 3,000 years. Some of you are saying, I've been eating it longer than that, but but there's been one problem with bread for the first 2,900 years, and that was it took so stinking much time to slice it, right? And so many people had lost digits in the process of slicing it, and red blood on bread is not good. If it's red bread, don't eat it, you know. But in 1916, a jeweler decided that... I heard red bird and red... Anyway, okay. A jeweler decided in 1916 he was gonna solve the problem. So he sold his jewelry place, and he decided to make a bread slicing machine, and he worked on it for 10 10 years. In 1917, he was close. He had plans and drawings, and a fire broke out, and everything was burned up. 1927, 10 years later, he had improved it, and finally he made the first bread cutting machine. It was 3 foot wide, 5 foot tall, 3 foot high. It was a monster. And nobody bought it because probably they didn't figure they could get it to their place. I don't know. But it was the first commercially made bread machine. And somebody else joined him. And 1 year later, they began to sell bread slicing machines. And it was called the greatest forward step in the baking industry since wrapping bread up when you had it, is the greatest, and we now know things as the greatest thing since sliced bread. Have you heard that? And man, did it take a long time to get sliced bread. And a few years later, one of the companies that was doing a lot of baking bought one of the machines. And the Wonder Bread Company went a little bananas. Ever had Wonder Bread? All of a sudden, they had the corner on the market. Greatest thing since sliced bread, because he didn't give up. This morning, I think it's interesting that we're going to share communion, because though this bread is not sliced, it is the bread of life. 3,000 years we've been eating it. Jesus said, "This broken stuff is my body." As we're preparing for that, I'm going to ask the ushers to come, and they're going to pass the offering baskets, and we're going to get ready to share communion.